Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Seeker of the Truth, the Supreme Buddha, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Now, as practitioners of the Buddha, of the Dhamma, there are 2 things that we must protect. And you'll see that under these 2 things, there's actually more. But these are 2 of the most important things that we have to protect. And the 2 things are very simple. Our body and our mind. Nothing more than that. The 2 things that we have to protect is our body and mind. Why? Simply because these are the only 2 things we own. The only 2 things that we have. We all have a body and we all have a mind. Now, this is really important because sometimes we forget that we have to protect the mind. Sometimes we forget that we have to protect the body. Sometimes we're very focused on protecting the body. Sometimes we're too focused on protecting the mind. This is about finding a balance between both of these. Because what we have to realize is we only have this body. Once this body is no longer, you can almost give the term unusable. When it's unusable. Unusable meaning it can no longer give rise to the environment for the mind to arise. That means the mind will pass. And this is what we term death. We give the term of death. But once that's there, once that happens, now this body and this mind are no longer together. Now no longer a mind can arise in the body. And that changes the environment. Changing the environment can change various things. But not only this. If the environment of your body is something that will always give you pain, again, your mind is no longer able to focus. So if you say, for example, you know, it's like this. If you are worried, so let's say you came here by car, right? Let's say you are doubting whether you locked the car or not. Right, I ask all of you, did you lock the car? And now you're doubting, did I lock it or not? Now, if I continue and we start talking about, I don't know, like the most complex bit of Dhamma, what will happen is that doubt will no longer let you focus on what? On what I'm saying. Because every now and then the thought will arise, did I lock the car? Same thing with the physical body. If the physical body is in pain, sometimes you will not be able to focus on what? Focus on what is being said because of the pain. So this is why it's really important to focus on what? To take care of what? The body. Now, that's just one extreme is to forget about the body. Right? To think, oh no, there's no need to take care of my body. Therefore, I don't need to take a shower, don't need to eat, don't need to do anything. I'm just going to focus on my mind. The other extreme, I'm going to give my body the ultimate amount of pleasure. Right? Meaning, if I am hungry, right, or if I'm not hungry, I'm going to eat whatever I want to eat. Or, you know, I'm going to, you know, focus on my body health. So I'm going to be very, very aware on say, the, to take this sort of food, to do these sort of activities. And now you're very focused on the body. If you focus too much on the body, what will happen is what? You'll forget about the what? The mind. This is always a balance between, you know, am I focusing too much or too little? Because if the body becomes sick, now, we all know when we get a cold or when we get a fever, it's very hard to do day-to-day activities. Our daily tasks become more, you know, burdens and become more, you know, hard to do, more tiring. But then that's if you become sick. But then let's say you, take an example, say you overeat. Now again, more health issues arise. Now you have illnesses like, say, diabetes and cholesterol. And I'm not saying these like the genetic ones. I'm saying the illnesses that can arise from having too much. So this thing, the body is one of the most important parts of our life. Because we only get one of them. Once this body passes away, now, according to reincarnation, the mind will arise somewhere else. However, the environment will be different. See, you have one of the most important environments, you could almost say, in this entire universe. Because your environment is something that's inducive or something that can help you take steps forward towards your own liberation. Right? Because of your environment. So some of you, you know, you spend your entire lives at the monastery. Some of you spend, you know, spend as much time as possible contemplating, try and spend as much time as possible within the Dhamma. Therefore, you're every single day, every single day, week, month, you're progressing further and further on this journey. So your environment is one of the most special environments. You can almost say you are the most luckiest people alive in this entire universe. To be able to be in an environment that's taking you step by step forwards onto your journey to your own liberation. However, if you don't protect the body, now what? Now what? Now, if that environment disappears, you went from the luckiest person alive to the unluckiest person alive. Why? Because you had the opportunity, now you don't. This is the thing. We have to keep in mind about the body. Right? Because most sermons and most things, we focus more on the mind, the mental aspects. But every now and then, we have to remind ourselves, well, this is a body. Because there's a very common misconception saying that, okay, the more I understand the Dhamma, the less food I'm going to consume. Because why? I don't have attachments to food. Therefore, I'm going to eat little. Because, you know, it's only people who have, you know, strong attachments, you know, strong desires for food, will they eat more and more food? Will they consume large amount of food? You know, if I have little attachment, I'm going to consume a little amount. Now, that is a misconception, because how much food or how little food you eat doesn't determine how much attachment you have. Instead, what determines? How much pleasure, how much vexation that you feel while eating, that determines that's a good way of measuring how much attachment you have. Not about the amount. But there's lots of misconceptions in the idea that, you know, the more virtuous a person is, the less amount they eat. For example, what we have to remember is what food is a medicine. food is a medicine that we consume to help or to, you can't say cure, it's not really curing, but it's more to suppress hunger. That's what food is. Food is a medicine for the body. You know, just like if you have a bacterial infection, you know, the doctor will prescribe what? An antibiotic, saying, you know, take this tablet every 8 hours, right? Make sure you take it at the same time, right? From, you know, say you take it at 6, then you should take it at 2, then you take it at 10. But take it every 8 hours or take it every 6 hours. Now, the doctor will prescribe this, and we follow what the doctor says. Right? Forget one here and there, but we try our very best to keep to this course. But when it comes to food, do we take it like a course, like a drug course? Or do we take it as, should I be eating here? Or do I need to be eating here? Or, you know, there's a delicious chocolate cake in the fridge. Should I eat some more of that? Are we taking it like a course, or are we taking it like, you know, willy-nilly, just thinking about what I need to do and picking it out? See, we have to treat our body with utmost care. Like something that always rings a bell is, you know, when our monks, we have to travel outside. Something that you know, people from other countries may not realize, but in Sri Lanka, in your back seats, you don't need to wear seatbelts. However, when we go out, we make sure we wear seatbelts in the back. Why? Because we're risking our life. Because our health, our body is one of the most important things. Because without that, how can we contemplate? How can we progress further and further? So we have to be very, we have to understand the importance of the body. We have to keep the body healthy for as in, it's not a constant, you know, I'm going to have to eat healthy or I have to do this healthy. No, you have to be aware. Like, you know, even, so someone who is an arahant will also think about their body. Will think about it for the reason of helping others. They'll think about themselves, because if they don't keep healthy, what will happen is what? They'll become sick. Now, of course, tending to a sick arahant, right, is very meritorious. But let's say the arahant passes away. Now, how can the arahant now carry on helping others? So even an arahant will try to keep healthy. An arahant will try to keep their body in not pristine conditions, but a stable condition. Because our one of our jobs is to protect the body. Now, being aware of this, what we have to do is we have to understand that if I have an illness, do I want to spread it to other people as well? Now, we saw during COVID and during, you know, these pandemics and epidemics and all these sort of things that, you know, people become really, you know, I'm going to go out without wearing a mask. I'm sick. I'm going to go out without wearing a mask because I don't like wearing a mask. It's itchy or, you know, it's hard to breathe. And they do that without understanding that there are other bodies around. And these bodies are also will become sick. You see, the more we understand, the more compassion we have, the more we realize that just like this, there are those. So the way I protect this, I have to help protect those. So that's the body. Now the other thing that we have to protect is what? The mind. How do you take care of the mind? Right? Do you like take it out and wash it and put it back in? Right? Is that, you know, that do you have, what is the hygiene of the mind? How could you take care of the mind? Because the mind is something that arises and passes, right? It's not something that you can actually do something with. But how can you protect and take care of the mind? You know, so I don't think this is not something that you all do, but I do know this is something that's very common amongst lots of people. Okay, I'm going to give you a riddle and let's see if you can answer this, right? Again, it's not common amongst all of you, but it's common amongst people. When you sit down, I come out. Most of the time, I travel through a pocket or travel by hand. What am I? I was very fortunate to be able to, sometime last week, to be able to try to go out of the monastery. And me and another monk, we decided to almost take a survey. Almost just like a survey, not even just like a proper survey with like checkboards and whatnot. Just a random, just a count. Count the amount of times we see a person with what? With what? With what? No, we try to count the amount of people we saw without a phone. Because if we said with a phone, we're going to have to count like continuously. It's easier to count the amount of people without one. Either without a phone at hand or on their ears, because you can't see if they're in the pocket. And, you know, it was very surprising. If the phone is not by the ear, it's usually in a hand. Very rarely do you see a phone in a pocket. Now, here's the thing, right? If you see something, like, how often do you see a person holding a laptop? Very rarely, because it's only used when it's necessary, right? You only take it out and use it when necessary. But when something is constantly in your hand, what does it mean? What does it mean? If something is constantly in your hand, what does it mean? That means there is not enough time for you to put that, you can put that in your pocket or store it somewhere else. It's always there, always needs to be there. Now, it's actually really surprising. Like, we went to a place in Sri Lanka, and something that me and the monks were talking about was, in this entire massive hall, like we were saying that, like, you know, I'm pretty sure there's only four people without a phone. That's you, me, and the other two monks. Everyone else there had to have it somehow. And every single person who walked through the door, you can see, yep, so that's a phone. That's a phone. Phone in the ear, phone in the hand, right? And the moment they sit down, wherever they sat down, the moment they sit down, the phone comes out. You know, sometimes just looking out in the world, you learn so much. So you learn so much about the human nature. The moment they sit down, the phone comes out. Now, I am not 100% sure, but I do really hope that none of you are like that. And I know most of you aren't, but there are so many people like that. And as we continue, right, as we develop as humanity, right, we'll see more and more of these happen. You know, literally, if I had a phone and took a video, I would have shown you the video, but we couldn't. But you can literally, whenever you go out onto the street, just see how often you see a phone. Now, phones aren't bad, of course, communication, you know, sending messages and whatnot, important stuff. But is it just important stuff that they receive from the phone? See, when it comes to protecting the mind, how can you protect the mind? By removing phones? No. By removing phones isn't how you protect the mind. A mind can only be so-called harmed, because you're not really harming a mind, but what you're doing is you're creating a bad environment for the mind to arise. And the only way you can do that is by exposing yourself to different views. Exposing yourself to different views. Because what a phone will do isn't just to call someone when you need to send a message. It's now also a platform or a device that's used to take in as many views as they possibly can. You know, if someone says, you know, this flower is, you know. And the funny thing is, it can also talk about, say, the body as well. You know, these sort of foods are really good for you. Now, of course, these foods can be good for you. But what is that also putting inside of your mind? A view. You know, do this to do this, or do that, have this, do this. And all it's doing is giving you different views. Now, the other day, I had a child ask, you know, in the 10 precepts and in the 8 precepts that you all observe today, you know, you have, you know, there's Nachigita Vadita, right? And this also includes listening to songs. And one child who absolutely loved, like, songs, you know, his entire past and his present as well, is constantly listening to music. He loves music. So he asked, like, why is this a precept? Why is listening to songs bad? The answer is, listening to songs isn't bad. Why is it not bad? Because the mind arises, the mind passes. You know, right now you're hearing, you know, these sounds, you know, you're hearing my voice. Is hearing my voice bad? No, the mind arises, the mind passes. However, when it comes to songs, number one, the mind, because of different views, it will grab on tight onto those sort of songs, right? But also, you know, once you listen to a song that you enjoy, it plays in your mind constantly. It's something that you can't stop the mind from thinking about. Definitely, especially songs that are, you know, so-called catchy, or songs that are so-called, you know, your favorite sort of songs. They stick in the mind. Now, sticking in the mind isn't bad. However, it will come and constantly occupy your thinking. Therefore, you can't do what now? You sometimes will forget to contemplate, forget to apply Dhamma. Because if you like songs and if you're constantly playing that in your head, you know, the tendency for you to contemplate will decrease. Now you're spending so much time not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And you are spending so much time, you know, so much time giving yourself this immense amount of pleasure. So this is the thing, right? We have to protect both the body and the mind. You can't just focus on just the mind, because then you have the body. But you can't just focus on the body, because you have the mind. I think the best way you can understand this is by thinking of the body to be, you know, like a car. You can drive a car, right? And not look after it, right? Let's say you take the car and you just drive. The first thing that happens is you'll run out of fuel. But let's say you do pump fuel. Now, something that I know lots of people may not have done, but know is already bad. You know, for a petrol tank, you fill it with diesel, right? I've heard certain stories of different individuals, you know, pumping diesel into petrol tanks, not knowing what it is. What happens to the car? What happens to the car? You put diesel in a petrol tank. You won't be able to drive. The car will splutter and stop. You can try again and it might not even turn on. So you have to put in what? The correct fuel. And then also you have to check the oil. Right? And water. You have to put in the right, you have to put in water. Instead of putting the right coolant, let's say you put something else. Let's say instead of adding water, you add, say, kitchen oil. What will happen to the car? The car may still run, but sooner or later, what's going to happen? You're going to have a breakdown. Now you can say, well, you know, that's the internal workings of the car. Then what happens? But if you don't wash the car, clean the car, what will happen? Not only will you start to see, you know, small white insects and creatures crawling around like maggots and whatnot, but also it will start to damage the car itself. You know, damage the car itself. If you don't clean and upkeep the car, if you don't look after the car, if you don't drive it safely. I mean, driving it safely, as in, you know, sometimes you have to be aware of your surroundings. You know, where am I? What am I doing? Now, if you think of yourself to be a very clumsy person, that's you driving recklessly. If you think of yourself to be someone really clumsy, that's you driving a car recklessly, hitting things here and there, having dents on this car. Now, a dent or two won't make a difference, but it can accumulate. So looking after the car. But also you have to look after the driver. Because the driver has to do what? Be focused. Be able to think clearly. That's why they say, you know, don't drink and drive. Because the driver has to be fully aware. If not, what's going to happen? The car will, they'll hit the car somewhere. And then both the driver and the car will no longer be able to work. So, you know, you as a practitioner, right, as someone who's contemplating on Dhamma, someone whose life is very valuable, right, like if you deem your life to be valuable, then you have to protect both of these things. Both of these things, and actually have an idea on both, not just one. Now, how else can you protect and take care of the mind? How else can you protect and take care of the mind? One is to stop unnecessary views from coming in. That's why, you know, the Buddha will also say, you know, try to reduce the amount of unnecessary talk, or in Pali, ditiskata. Right? The Buddha has given 32 topics to stop, to refrain from talking about. Why? Because it's not helping the mind. It's not helping the mind. Instead, it's just, you know, putting more and more views. Hey, let's say you and, say, another person are now, like, chatting about, instead of chatting about Dhamma, they start chatting about, say, something that is useless. Like, for example, you know, the other day, you know, I went to, you know, this restaurant, and I got to eat this. Now, what benefit is it doing to yourself? Because the more you talk about this, the more that view of that place being amazing is now, you know, becoming stronger. Not only that, but the other person now gets an extra view, thinking, if I ever go out, I'm going to go to this restaurant and eat this food because it's really good. Strengthening that view now. Now they're vexing for that, and you're vexing as well. both times you're both people are vexing. And not only that, it's a waste of time. A time where you both could be talking about the Dhamma. A time when you both could be discussing about, about the anicca nature of the food. Now you're spending time thinking what? Ooh, if I was to ever go to that restaurant, I want to eat this food, that food. Wasting your precious time. Normally, we say time is money. Right? We say time is money. Now, for us, the most valuable thing that we deal with people, back when we all lived in society and we live amongst society, the way we deal with people is with money. If you want something, you buy it with money. Now, for all of us, we don't buy with money. We buy with what? We buy with our time. You buy with your time. We no longer deal with money. We deal with time. So when you go and you start talking about your favorite food with another individual, you're paying for that. You both are paying for that with your time. Unfortunately, unlike money you can accumulate. You can do a job, you can have a business, and you can increase the amount of money you have. But with time, all you can do is just spend. And the worst part is, you don't have a way to check the balance. How much time do I have left? All you can do is just spend and see how long you have. So how else can we protect the mind? Very simple. Something that we all do. We can all continuously do. And what's that? While one thing is to stop external views from coming in. The other thing is what? Taking views out. And how do we do that? How do we get rid of views? By using medicine. The medicine of what? The medicine of the Dhamma. For the past couple, you could almost say weeks and days, something that Guru Handra and all of our monks are focusing a lot on is on this aspect of ego. And this egocentric nature. And I think it's very interesting because this is something. Ego is something that is always something that's inside our minds. It's something that drives us. You can almost say that society is based on this foundation of ego. Technically, the way you present yourself, the way you act, the way you behave, it's also something that's affected by your ego. And it's something that is constantly, changing the way you changing things that you do. For example, right, something that you'll really see is, what is the purpose of uniforms? What is the purpose of uniforms? Now, there are many purposes, right? You can say, uniforms give people authority. So if you see someone in a police uniform, they're police, and therefore, if they say do this, you comply, you obey, and you do it. But there's also another reason why you have uniforms. Uniforms are also there because of our ego. Because our ego gets hurt. Let me give an example. let's say you are going into, now let's say there's a, let's say there's a convention, right? A convention for scientists, right? And very, really, or let's say, a convention for scientists, right? People who are really intelligent, smart people are all coming and coming together to talk about something. Now, what will they wear? They'll be wearing suits and coats and ties and whatnot. Now, let's say there's a security guard, right? Who has to check who's coming in, who's coming out. Now, if they were wearing normal clothes, what will they feel? Everyone there is wearing suits and coats, and I'm just wearing a t-shirt and some jeans. They won't listen to me. They won't even care about me. So when they come and ask, excuse me, sir, what's your name? He feels really what? The security guard will feel very inferior. So to reduce the amount of hurt that mind feels, we've introduced something called uniforms. Now, what are uniforms normally? Uniforms are very smart looking. Why? To make the person feel what? I have a role to play here. I am someone important here. If they're wearing a shirt tucked in, right, with a tie, or, a badge that says police, or I'm not saying police, a security guard. Now, what do they feel? Okay, I'm security guard. You listen to me. All to do with this uniform. So, this mind, this mind is based on this foundation of what? Ego. So to protect the mind, something that we have to do is understand where this comes from. I really want each and every one of you to really be focused on ego. Be really, with ego eyes, look at ego. Because what you will notice is ego creeps into every single thing that you do. For example, at this very moment, sometimes ego can creep in. How? Let's say your leg is hurting. And you want to stretch out. But let's say there are two people by your sides. And they're going to see you stretching. Sometimes you won't stretch because in case these two people see. If they see, what would they think of me? Or let's say you sneeze or cough. Right? Something that, these are bodily functions. Sneezing, coughing. But sometimes what will happen is when you sneeze and cough, you will try to hide the fact that you sneezed. That you coughed. Because what is that? Because that makes you feel what? Your ego feels what? Hurt. You feel inferior. Even at this moment, using your ego eyes, try to pinpoint where ego is at play. Because ego is something that creeps if you ever give a small gap, right? A small gap where you aren't focused or you aren't mindfully aware. If you give it a small gap, the ego will try to fill it somehow. The smallest nooks and crannies, ego will seep in and take over. But the thing is, if you were to even, this is something that you'll realize, right? If you were to ask someone, if you go in and ask someone, let's say they do something, and you know that they may have done that because they feel hurt, their ego is hurt. If you were to ask them, is your ego hurt? What would they say? No, are you crazy? My ego is not hurt. Again, out of what? Hurt ego. So even when people, see, ladies and gentlemen, you know, ego is something that is so sneaky. Do you know why it's sneaky? Because it's one of the first things that are made. These are one of the first things that is made in the mind. Because where does ego come from? Where does ego come from? Ego, another word for ego, is basically jati. And a synonym of ego is basically jati, right? Or this sense of self. Now, where does that come from? You know, attachment or tanha. Tanha, I think the best description for tanha, or this is the best description of this attachment, is basically a black hole. Why? Now we know the process of, you know, ignorance, and then we have attachment, right? Ignorance, attachment, and then vexation, da da da. Attachment is basically like a black hole. A black hole in the sense, it will take whatever it can, will take whatever it can to fulfill itself, to fulfill the unfulfillable. What I mean is, let's say right now you're all hearing English, right? No one's hearing other language. No? Okay, we're all hearing English. Because of ignorance and attachment, attachment's a black hole. What will the black hole do? Will take whatever it can to fulfill its this great force. So when the senses, you know, when the senses give rise to, say, sound, right? The sound to be English. It takes that, and it takes it, and then it uses that, right? To create this sense of, you know, me. I'm hearing English. You know, this is something that you'll find very common, right? Especially amongst anyone who you know, had to... Say, especially in Sri Lanka, you see this, right? If there are two people, right? Two people, both people can speak in English. They'll both say, "We both can speak English." However, in their mind, what they feel? What do they feel? I can speak English. I can speak English. But we'll say what? We can speak English. Even when they say we, because of attachment, and especially because of ignorance and attachment, this black hole will take whatever it can to create this sense of I, the sense of, you know, ego. And ego has to be what? Has to be what? Unique. So let's say person A will think that, you know, we can speak English. But in person A's head, he thinks, but I can speak better than B. I can speak better than B. Because ego was always trying to find this unique feeling. Person B will think, you know, we can speak English, but I know more was an A. Trying to find this unique feeling, you know, I am unique. Because ego has to be something that is separate than anything else in this world. So this ignorance, this attachment, is something that is very common to a black hole. Takes whatever it can to feel unique. Whatever it can to feel unique. Whatever it sees, smells, tastes, touch, hears, whatever it thinks, it uses that to feel unique. To create this unique feeling. And this unique feeling, because once a unique feeling is felt, a quality of this feeling is to also absorb, also to take. Because once you have you, now you need mine. Once you have you, now you need mine. This cannot be owned by anyone unless there is some, unless for this to be owned, there has to be someone. Someone to own it. Someone unique to own it. If there is no one unique, can this be owned by anyone? Okay. There's an empty world. And there's a small pen on this world. Who does the pen belong to? There's a completely empty world. Oh no, we'll say, okay. We send this pen to Jupiter, right? The only pen on Jupiter. Who does the pen belong to? We just send a random pen to Jupiter. Who does the pen belong to? Will Jupiter say that it belongs to me because now it's on me? No, because it cannot be owned by anyone unless there is someone to own it. So we also send now, you know, on Jupiter there's an alien. Alien sees pen. Now alien thinks what? This is my pen. Once you feel this unique individual feeling, once you have this feeling of uniqueness, now you have this thing, this idea of mine. Because you have to find a way to describe who you are. Once you have this sense of this unique feeling of me, or this feeling of ego, now you have to find ways to describe you. It's like this, right? Try to describe this circle. How would you describe this circle? You'll say what? It's round. It's round. Let's get rid of the alien and the pen. It's round. It has a black lining, outline. Inside is white. Apart from that, what else can you talk about? How would you describe this? Because once you've separated it out, now you're trying to find ways to describe it. It's white, it's circular, got a black outlining. Ego is the same. Once there's a separate or this unique feeling, ego will find ways to describe itself. So now it will take whatever it can and put it inside and say, you know, degree. Right? And it will think, it'll pull something else and say, house. No, I'm not going to risk it and draw a car. And we'll take whatever it can and pull whatever it can. So attachment, what does attachment do? Attachment is the black hole that takes whatever it sees, hears, smells, touch, and brings all of this together. You can almost say that attachment is what drives this process to happen. Attachment is a driving force. Because even ignorance by itself is harmless. Ignorance by itself is harmless. However, ignorance, because of attachment, drives this entire process to feel this separate feeling. Once it feels separate, now it has to find whatever it can to feel separate. You know, think back when you were at school. When you were at school, let's say your school had uniform, you had school uniform, right? School uniforms are there to make you feel what? You know, put you all into one group to feel that you're all together as one. But think about what children will do to make them feel unique. You know, if you were to take a group of school children together, right? Group of school children together and try to, you know, and look at this, their differences. You'll see differences. What are the differences? You know, their shirts will be tucked. Some shirts will be untucked. Some people put up their top bottom. Some people don't have the top button up. You know, some people will have their shirts ironed. Some people will make sure. I was told that there are some certain very creative individuals who will have the front of their shirt ironed pristinely, but the back of their shirt, they've made a spider web pattern, right? How? I don't know, but they were able to make a spider web pattern. And there'll be something, say, for example, trousers, right, or pants. Like, you know, either too short or too long, creased or no creased. Someone's telling me that, you know, sometimes they'll bunch the trouser or their uniform up behind their knee and sit with it bunched up behind their knee. So when they stand up, you have these creases, so it looks like they're wearing jeans. Why? To feel what? Separate. Now, for example, bags. Always looking for this sense of, you know, I'm different, I'm unique. Because once ignorance and attachments create this feeling, this ego, wants to do whatever it can to feel unique. You know, some people have big bags, some people have small bags. I remember there'll be some people who would wear like no bags, would just carry the books in their hands. Right? Pins, no pins. Right? Key tags, no keychains. Always looking for the sense of difference. They'll do whatever they can. Because ego is always looking for, oh, I'm different. I'm special. And because of this unique feeling, it always wants to make itself feel big. Now, something that you're always, something that if you ever get the chance, is if you ever, say, if you ever get a chance to go to a school or teach at a school or hang around children, you will see their ego at play, because children don't know how to conceal their ego. Some children do very well, but some children don't know how to conceal their ego. So you can look at them and realize how ego is changing their decisions. How ego is affecting their every movement. Because as you grow older, you know, we feel that having a big ego is a bad thing. So ego finds a way to conceal ego. The ego will find a way to make itself, to conceal itself. So people don't think I have a big ego. You know, just try to look at life and see ego at play. You know, do you want to be, you know, are you someone who wants to go to the front of the line, to the back of the line? Both are what? Ego at play. Do you want to always, you know, always be on the good side of people? Do you know what? So I know this is something that lots of people have, is this idea that everyone should like me. Everyone should like me. There shouldn't be a single person in this world that does not like me. That's why if someone becomes really sad or angry with me, I have to do whatever I can to make them feel better. Not because you want them to feel better. Because of what? Your ego is hurt. Someone hates me. I don't like that. I don't want people to think badly of me. So I'm going to try whatever I can to make them feel good. Now, in these sort of environments, right, where you know, you're surrounded by the Dhamma and whatnot, this can actually, ego, this is why, you know, ego is something that can also hinder your path. It can also be something that hinders your path. Because sometimes your ego will try to find ways to make it feel what? I'm very virtuous. I'm a very good person. Like, for example, let's say someone comes up to you and asks you, right? Sir, madam, right? Or anagarika, or sign dancer, or whatnot. And they come up and ask you, before you came to the monastery, what was your job? Now, there'll be some people who will, you know, take this as an opportunity to boast about themselves and say, you know, I used to be this, I used to be that, I used to be da 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 da. And some people use this to make themselves feel, you know, very humble. Again, ego. Thinking, saying that, you know, does it really matter? It doesn't really matter, you know. I just did a small job, just a small, you know. I was just like a small job. I was like a specialist in this sort of, in this field, just a very small job. Making them feel what? Really humble. Some people will say, we'll lie and say, you know, I was just working and just at a shop when they were, you know, really big. Played a really big role somewhere else. They say, you know, I was working in a small shop. Again, to conceal what? See, the thing about ego is you have to be very careful because it can spring up everywhere. How many stanzas of Dhammapada have you memorized? You know, I'm on, say you're still learning the first two, right? You know, I just first finished the first bug, one person. Haven't started, second person. Dhammapada, really, should we be studying Dhammapada or should we be contemplating on Dhamma? Another person. Again, there'll be different, see, ego works in different ways. To conceal itself, to protect itself, to make itself feel greater in some sort of way. You know, that's why sometimes when you go and talk to your teachers, you conceal parts. You conceal parts. So when you go to your teachers and you tell them about something that's happened, look at your mind and see whether your mind conceals. You see this a lot with children, right? The child comes up to you and is like, this person did this to me. And let's say this person came and shouted at me. Now you go and ask them, like, okay, for them to shout at you, what did you do? I didn't do anything. You press them on, you keep pressing on, and they say, well, I called him stupid. That's why, he shouted at me. And then they conceal parts to protect what? Ego. Now, we also do the same thing. Some parts we conceal because we think that if my teacher found out, they'll think really badly of me. They'll think, I'm not contemplating. Like we talked about this before, if someone came up to you and asked you, to start contemplating. So for example, if I give a good sermon and say, you should all start contemplating. Sometimes that will hurt your ego thinking, wait, does that mean I'm not contemplating now? I am contemplating. But why does it hurt your ego? Because you think that I'm unique. I have to be special. So attachment is this unfulfillable black hole which takes whatever it can to feel this unique feeling. Once that feeling is there, that feeling is also still attracting anything it could possibly have to make itself feel big. Now, I wonder if you remember Once we talked about ego having layers, and we called it onion skins. How every single time we have this fundamental feeling, and then we grow these layers on top of it. Right? So for example, there's the original feeling of self. And then on top of this, you have the feeling of, this is who I am. This is what I have. And then, I'm a doctor, I'm a nurse, I live here, I live there. And you are growing these onion skins. And when you meet someone and their onion skins, the onion skins will interlock with yours, you like the person. Because you can relate to them. And say, oh, this person's like me. That's why, if someone came up and start talking about, Buddhism and say, oh, Buddhism is like this, Buddhism is like that. That's why people will actually, start to come up and start arguing. I remember long ago, maybe, I think someone showed me a video I think it was a funny video about someone talking about the Buddha and his disciples, right? And therefore the comments right on this were all the Buddhist viewers were saying that this is really inappropriate. You shouldn't be really doing things like this. But I remember someone showed me one comment which says, a true Buddhist would watch this video and not get hurt. Because why? This is not hurting anymore. For someone to really, if they understand them, now this can't be hurt because this shouldn't be there. But if someone wants to say something about, Buddhism, why do we feel the need to say something back? Because ego. Someone's hurting, not Buddhism, but someone's hurting my ego. I have to protect my ego at all costs. The thing, we have to really, really look at egos, with microscopes. Because in every single mind, a mind that arises without you being aware, right? Being mindfully aware, ego is always at play. Ego is always at play. And because of that, the mind is constantly, there is no, you can almost say there is no time when the ego is not hurting. Once ego is there, it is always hurt. Even if you become the richest man alive, even if you become, the most powerful man alive, your ego is still hurting. Hurting for some sort of reason. People try whatever they can to make themselves feel so big, so people feel so, feel so great about themselves. They'll try whatever they can to make themselves feel that, this is who I am. I'm leaving a legacy when I pass away. I know, I remember, this is something that I had. I remember growing up, I really wanted to be a famous scientist or engineer or something. So my name will be written in a book of history. Because we want to leave this idea that I am unique, I am special. But in reality, what is all of this? All of this this onion skins, what is this all? What is this all? All created from a feeling. A feeling. The black hole created a feeling. Just a feeling. You just feel that you're separate. You just feel that you're unique. But in reality, it's just a mind that arises and passes away. You're just a mind that arises and passes away. Why do you feel unique? Why do you feel unique? Why do you feel special? Because of the black hole of ignorance. No, the black hole of attachment. Sorry. The black hole of attachment. It brings whatever it can to create this feeling because of ignorance. You know, that's actually why, because of ignorance, is why we can't live happily. Why we can't live with a smile on our faces is because of this feeling of ego. Actually, you know, it's, you know, getting rid of this is why, just by understanding, you know, what ego does and seeing ego in action, just by looking at ego, you see how much pressure your mind goes through, how many things your mind does to fulfill this ego, fulfill a feeling. It's like trying to feed a ghost. How much food can you give a ghost for it to be full? How many burgers? How many pizzas? You give it whatever you can, right? You're trying to feed a ghost. How much can you give a ghost for them to be satisfied? You can't. You're trying to fulfill a ghost here. You're trying to fulfill, almost like a hologram here. There's a hologram and now you're trying to feed the hologram. You're trying to, you know, close the hologram. You're trying to make this hologram feel so special. But all you have to do is, if you were to cover a light, the hologram disappears. If you just were to cover that small light, the hologram disappears. And so does all these onion skins. All those just collapse. Because all you have to do is realize what ego truly is. And that ego is just a feeling of the mind. Once you feel that, now, you no longer have the feeling to feel the same, to feel greater, to feel, you know, superior, to feel inferior. No, you just feel what you're feeling. The mind arises, the mind passes away. You see the color black, the mind arises, the mind passes away. Now you see the color black, you use this to create ego. And now it's, I am seeing the color black. I like black. You see, upadana is basically the things that the mind grabs onto to create the feeling of self. Namarupa is what it uses to create this feeling. You see, if you look at this, this is the perfect trap. If people didn't have ego, if minds did not have ego, society will not exist. Society won't exist. Just think about it. You have a group of people, no person wants to be better or worse than anyone else. No person wants to feel separate or unique to someone else. Because if you think about this, you know, society came because of ego, because people didn't know how to control their minds and their ego. Do we have society? Think about this. Let's travel back in time to the caveman era, where we had cavemen, right? Right, let's say there's a group of four families and three other people. Right. Now, because each of these people feel unique, now what will happen is, one person will feel what? I am better than all these people. I'm stronger, I'm faster, I can hunt better. Now I am the leader. I am the leader of the pack. If anyone comes and questions my authority, they'll answer to my stick. Thanks to ego, does this person feel what? This person really wants to. This person really wants to eat some berries. Doesn't have these berries. This person has berries. This person comes and takes berries. This person feels that these berries are what? Mine. This person now thinks that I received berries. I like berries. And now the leader will have to punish this person. Because of what? Because of what? Ego. Because this person thinks that these berries are mine. This person thinks that I want these berries. And once they steal, this person thinks that this is unfair. Therefore, I have to give some sort of consequence. Therefore, this person is punished. So punishments come from what? Ego. You know, this person has berries and shares it amongst people. Right? My berries, I'm giving to others. The leader thinks, wow, this is a very good thing. This person is good. Therefore, needs to give something extra. Give them a better stick. Let's say. Now, punishment and rewards come from what? Ego. Now, because of reward, what does this person feel? I am now superior. Better than everyone else. Everyone else has to respect me. Now you get a series of hierarchy. You know, I'm king, I'm superior, everyone else isn't like this. And you know, if you look at history, all you can see is ego at play. Every single historical point, right? Pick any point, I don't know, the Egyptians, you know, the pharaohs, and you go even further back to the Mayans and all these people, you always had ego at play. Ego is what kept society, ego is what kept humanity going. Ego is the one thing, this is why it's a perfect trap. You know, if the mind had thought of anything but ego, we would not have society. Ego is the perfect thing. Because once that's created, to keep this, they'll do anything. The mind will do anything. The mind will do whatever it can to make itself feel what? I am like this, I am like that. Now that's the thing. Once you get rid of ego, right, the world can no longer have you. You no longer belong to the world. So what does the world do? Throws you out. Because everyone on this earth has to have ego to be on this earth. But when the mind realizes the fault, gets rid of ego, the world can no longer keep you. Therefore, you're thrown out of the world. You know, your access to the world is denied. And you finally come out of the trap. See, all you have to do is understand. Yeah, all I want you to do is for the next week, just constantly look at your own mind and see where ego is at play. Just look everywhere and to see where ego is. every time you talk, every time you do something, right? No matter what you do, even when you do, you know, meritorious activities, right? You know, discussing them or whatnot. Just have, you know, have just a second just to think about ego. Because you'll see, right? The more you focus on ego, the more you see how much is how much ego is actually playing an effect. How much ego is actually, you know, in our own lives. We may not be the same as these people, as these cavemen. Like, we no longer want to be the king, no longer want to be bigger above the rest. But the mind still wants to feel special, still wants to feel unique. And it will do it in its own ways, in any way possible, to this feeling of uniqueness. That's why A and B may have the same. That's why A and B could be twins. But those twins will always want to do something to feel unique. We'll do something to feel unique. Right? Whether it's, you know, wear something different or wear the same thing, but, you know, do something different. And that's why, you know, siblings don't like being compared to one another, because I am a completely different person. Or, you know, something that I was told is you should never compare your wife to their mother. Right, it's the worst thing to do. Never say you both are alike. Because why? What do they want to feel? So never compare your wife to your mother-in-law, because they both want to feel what? Special. Unique. I'm nothing like my mother. I'm different. I'm special. Even though it's very obvious, plainly obvious, that both of them are acting the same way. Because why? Everyone wants to feel what? Unique, special, different. Right. So I really do want you to really focus on ego in this coming week. Because ego, the more you look at ego, the more you criticize your own ego, the more you realize how much ego is actually affecting your life. The more you criticize and you look at and you see ego through, you know, eagle eyes, the more you realize how much is at play. You know, every single moment, ego is doing something, playing some sort of role. Every single moment. Right? When you're not aware. Because remember, every mind arises with what? With ignorance and attachment. And if attachment is there, it will suck in whatever it can to make it feel unique. So every mind does have ego. I want you to be as aware as you possibly can. Because once you're aware and you see the problem, now can you actually look for the solution? Because we can be talking about ego, but if you feel that, you know, I don't have ego, then can you just look for a solution for something that you don't have? Next week we do have the ordination ceremony, right? So please do come stay and involve yourself with this ordination ceremony, whatever you possibly can, because it is a time where we, you know, see our most senior anagarikas transform themselves into monks. Although currently they do have, you're going to say, a monkhood mindset. The transform of the body or the physical form is also very symbolic. And there are countless stories of the Buddha where at the moment of their ordination, do they achieve their Margabuddhas, right? As some people who have, there are stories where when their hair has been shaven off, they become anagamis, anarhans. So it's a very, very special time. So do please come and Rejoice in the merits and do as many merits as you possibly can. And bless them, of course, bless them deep in your heart. Which means next week the sermon will not be there, right? We will not have the English sermon today, but we will have Guru Hamdra's sermon. Apart from that, do we have any other messages? Do we have any other messages today? We do. We have Vesak coming up. Next month, we have Vesak. I think, you know, April and May are two of our busiest months. Where you look one way, look the other, there's some sort of something, right? The Dakini or whatnot. You look one way or the other, you have New Year's. You look one way or the other, another Dakini. You look one way or another, then you have Vesak coming up. So again, another ordination ceremonies as well. So it's a very, very special. These 2 months are very special. So if you know, some of us, we don't have a choice, right? We have to come. But those of us who have a choice, please do come. It's a very special time. Very special time. So Vesak, we will have our Vesak event. So Vesak's on the 12th. So ordinary ceremony is on the 3rd. Vesak's on the 12th. And we have some other things in the future. So I haven't been told exactly what you have to be doing for Vesak. However, if I get told, I'll make sure to pass the message. Okay, then. Let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds. Today, so first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddhist teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time in memorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study to understand the Kumbhavan Dhamma. Those take and transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the chief plates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to a noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns, resident local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, through thick and thin, come and shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sannanse, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits in special gratitude to those who make great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating the sermon, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of merits, if any of them have been born in the worthy planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blessed plane. May the power of merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, arms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass on the know-how, extend their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Devas, Brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadevas, Westernimals, gods and deities who have committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasanam. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from our meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who preceded us, to all that's been friends and family to us. In this infinite long journey in Sansara, to all that have helped us, support us, sisters, take a moment to transfer these merits. So take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives In the world, be the friend of foe, rejoice in the moments required today. This is what demon transmits all the losses in life, natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them be those who have been friends and family to us in the long journey in samsara. May they power these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble for path, and attain the supreme bliss of nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired through the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Mahin nuances in this blessed land. And finally, may through all the power of all the merits acquired the other day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arhat nuance or Arhat Mahin nuance in this very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Navajupa Jam be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen midetnva, dvesha ginnen midetnva, moha ginnen midetnva, nibbana parama sukhayin, sukhita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Raga ghini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha ghini niveva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Tunwange Suvisananta Mahaguna Belin Siloka Sil Satyam Nibbana Pramisukin Sukhita Vittu.